He turns and looks back at me expectantly.
Yes?
Does anyone know the names of the outer provinces? He waves his hand, uninterested now that he knows he isn't going to get something worth trading from me. He can't sell the answer to this question.
That is their name, he calls back. The outer provinces.
Those blank, divided outer provinces on the map hold my gaze. The map is thick with letters and information, and it's hard to make out all the names. I scan them over, not really reading them, not sure what I'm looking for. Then, something stands out to me. One piece of information lodges in my sorting brain. Sisyphus River. It threads through some of the western provinces, and then through two of the outer provinces, and off into the void of the other countries. Kai must be from one of these two provinces. And since that's where the attack came when he was young, that could be where the trouble is now. I lean closer to the map to memorize the location of the two places that might be his. I hear footsteps coming closer again, and I turn.
Are you sure I can't help you with anything?
The small man asks. I don't want to sell anything, I almost exclaim to him. And then I realize that he seems to be sincere. I point to the Sisyphus River on the map, one tiny black thread of hope running along the paper. Do you know anything about this river? His voice hushes.
I heard a story about it once when I was younger. A long time ago, the river turned toxic partway down, and no one could live near its banks. But that's all I've heard.
Thank you, I tell him. Because now I have an idea, thanks to what I've learned about the way our elderly die. Could our society have poisoned the waters on their way down to the enemy country? But Kai and his family weren't poisoned. Perhaps they lived farther up in the higher of the two provinces along that river.
It's only a story,
the man warns me. He must have seen the hope flash across my face. Isn't everything? I say. I walk out of the museum, and I do not look back. My official waits for me in the green space outside the museum. Wearing white, sitting on a white bench, backed by a white-yellow sun. It's too much. I blink. This can't be real. If I close my eyes a little, I can pretend that this is the green space next to the game center, where I will meet my official for the first time. I can pretend that she's going to tell me that there's a mistake with my match. But this time, things will take a different turn, go down a different path, one where Kai and I can be together and happy. But there is no such path. Not here in Oria. She gestures for me to come and sit by her on her bench. It strikes me that she's chosen a strange place to meet, right here next to the museum doors. Then I remember that it's a perfect place, still and empty. Kai was right. No one here is interested in the past. The bench is carved of stone and feels solid and cool from the hours it spends in the shade of the museum. I put my hand against the rock after I sit down, wondering where they quarried the stone, wondering who had to move the rocks. This time I speak first. I made a mistake. You have to bring him back.
Kai Markham has already had one exception made for him. Most aberrations don't even have that, she says. You're the one who sent him away. You've proven our point. People who let the data slide, who let emotions get involved, create a mess for themselves.
You did this, I say. You set up that sort.
But you performed it, she says. Perfectly, I might add. You might be upset. His family might be devastated, but it was the right decision as far as his ability was concerned. You knew he was more than he pretended to be.
He should be the one who decides whether to stay or go. Not me, not you. Let him choose.
If we did, everything would fall apart, she says, patiently. Why do you think we can guarantee such long lifespans, How do you think we eradicated cancer? We match for everything, genes included. You guarantee these long lifespans, but then you kill us at the end. I know about the poison in the food for people like Grandfather. We can also guarantee a high quality of life up until the very last breath. Do you know how many miserable people in how many miserable societies across the years would have given almost anything for that? And the method of administering the poison? Poison, she says, unflinching, is unbelievably humane. Small doses in the patient's favorite foods. So we eat to die? She dismisses my concern. Everyone eats to die, regardless of what we do. Your problem is that you don't respect the system and what it offers you, even now. This almost makes me want to laugh. The official sees the twist of my lips and launches into a list of examples of ways I've broken with tradition in the past 2 months. And she doesn't even know the worst of them. But she doesn't cite a single example from all the years I towed the line. She cannot open my brain and lay it bare, but if she could, they would see that my memories are pure. That I truly wanted to fit in and be matched and do everything the right way. That I truly believed. That part of me believes all of it still. It was time for this little experiment to end, anyway, the official says, sounding regretful. We don't have the manpower to focus on it anymore, and of course, situations being what they are. What experiment? The one with you and Kai? I already know, I say. I know that you told him, and I know it was a bigger mistake than you led me to believe that first time we spoke. Kai was actually in the matching pool. It was no mistake, she says. And I am falling again, just when I thought I had hit the bottom. We decided to put Kai into the matching pool, she says. Now and then we do that with an aberration, simply to gather additional data and watch for variation. The general public doesn't know about it. There's no reason they should. What's important for you to know was that we were in control of the experiment all along. But the odds of him matching with me are virtually impossible, the official agrees. So you can see why we were intrigued, why we let you see Kai's picture so that you would be curious, why we made sure you were assigned to the same hiking group and then to the same pairs, why we had to follow it through, at least for a time. She smiles. It was so intriguing. We could control so many variables. We even reduced your meal portions to see if that would make you more stressed, more likely to give up. But you didn't. Of course, we were never cruel. You always had sufficient calories, and you're strong. You never did take the green tablet. Why does that matter? It makes you more interesting, she says. A very intriguing subject, in fact. Ultimately predictable, but still unusual enough to want to watch. It would have been interesting to see your situation play out to the final predicted outcome. She sighs, a sigh of genuine sadness. I planned to write an article about it. Available only to select officials, of course. It would have been an unparalleled proof of the validity of matching. That's why I didn't want you to lose your memory of what happened this morning at the air train station. All my work would have been for nothing. Now, at least I can see you make your final choice while you still know what happened. The anger fills me so full that there is no room for thought or speech. It would have been interesting to see it play out to the final predicted outcome. It was all planned from the start. Everything. Unfortunately, my skills are needed elsewhere now. She runs her hand along the data pod in front of her. We simply don't have the time to monitor the situation anymore, so we can't extend it any longer. Why tell me all of this? I ask. Why do you want me to know every last detail? She looks surprised. Because we care about you, Kasia. No more or less than we care about all our citizens. As the subject of an experiment, you have the right to know what happened, the right to make the choice we know you'll make now instead of waiting any longer. It's so funny, her use of the word choice. So unintentionally hysterical that I would laugh if I didn't think it would come out sounding like a cry. Did you tell Xander? She looks offended. Of course not. He's still your match. In order for the experiment to be controlled, he had to remain in the dark. He knows nothing about any of this. Except what I told him, I think. And I realize that she doesn't know. There are things she doesn't know. With this realization, it is as though something has been given back to me. The knowledge drops into my anger and distills it into something pure and clear. And one of the things she knows nothing about is love. Kai, however, was different, she says. We told him. We pretended we were warning him, but of course we were hoping to give him impetus to try to be with you. And that worked as well. She smiles, smug, because she also thinks that I don't know this part of the story. But of course I do. So you watched us all the time, I say. Not all the time, she answers. We watched you enough to get an effective sample of what your interactions were like. We couldn't watch all of your interactions on the hill, for example, or even on the smaller hill. Officer Carter still had jurisdiction over that area and did not look kindly on our being there. I wait for her to ask. Somehow I know she will. Even though she thinks she has an accurate sample, there is a part of her that has to know more. So what did happen between you and Kai? She asks. She doesn't know about the kiss. That was not what sent him away. That moment on the hill is still ours, mine and Kai's, ours. No one has touched it but the two of us. This will be what I have to hold on to as I go forward, the kiss and the poem. If you tell me, I can help you. I can recommend you for a work position in the city. You could stay here, you wouldn't have to leave for the farmlands with your family. She leans closer. Tell me what happened. I look away. In spite of everything, the offer is tempting. I'm a little afraid of leaving Oria. I don't want to leave Xander and Em. I don't want to leave the places that hold so many memories of Grandfather. And most of all, I don't want to leave this city and my burrow, because they are where I found and loved Kai. But he's not here anymore. I have to find him somewhere else. The prisoner's dilemma. Somewhere Kai keeps faith with me and I can do the same for him. I won't give up. No, I say clearly. I thought you'd say that, she tells me. But I hear the disappointment in her tone and I suddenly want to laugh. I want to ask her if it ever gets tedious being right all the time. But I think I know what her answer would be. So what is the final predicted outcome? I ask. Does it matter? She smiles. It's what will happen. It's what you'll do. But I'll tell you if you'd like. I realize that I don't need to hear it. I don't need to hear anything she has to say or any predictions she thinks she can make. They do not know that Xander hid the artifact, that Kai can write, that Grandfather gave me poetry. What else doesn't she know? You say you planned this all along? I say suddenly, on instinct, acting as though I want to be certain. You're telling me you put Kai into the matching pool yourselves? Yes, she answers. We did. This time I look right at her when she speaks, and that's when I see it. The faintest twitch of muscle in her jaw, a slight shift of her eyes, the smallest ring of performance in the tone of her voice. She doesn't often have to lie. She's never been an aberration, so this doesn't come easily to her. She hasn't had as much practice. She can't keep her face perfectly still the way Kai does when he's playing a game and he knows what he has to do, whether it's better to win or lose. Although she's been told how to play, she doesn't know exactly which card she's holding. She doesn't know who put Kai into the data pool. If the officials didn't, who did? I look at her again. She doesn't know, and she isn't listening to her own words. If the almost impossible happened before, my being matched to two boys I already knew, then it can happen again. I can find him. I stand up to leave. I think I smell rain in the air, even though there isn't a cloud in the sky, and I remember. I still have a piece of Kai's story left. Chapter 31. Xander sits on the steps of my house. It's a familiar place for him to be in the summer, and his position looks familiar too. Legs outstretched, elbows resting on the step behind him. The shadow he casts in the summer sun is smaller than he is, a darker, compacted version of Xander next to the real one. He watches me as I walk up the path, and when I get close, I see the pain still there in his eyes, a shadow behind the blue. I almost wish the red tablet had wiped away more than the past 12 hours for Xander, that he didn't remember what I told him, how much it ached. Almost, but not quite. Even though telling the truth has caused us both hurt, I don't see how I could have given Xander anything different. It was all I had to give, and he deserved to have it.
"I've been waiting for you," Xander says. "I heard about your family."
"I was in the city," I tell him.
"Come, sit by me," Xander says.
I hesitate. Does he mean this? Does he want me to sit by him? Or is he helping me put on a show for whoever might be watching? Xander keeps looking up at me, waiting.
"Please."
"Are you sure?" I ask.
"Yes,"
he says. And then I know that he is. He's in pain. I am too. It strikes me that perhaps this is part of what we are fighting to choose, which pain we feel. Not much time has passed since the match banquet, but we are different now, stripped of our fancy clothes, our artifacts, our belief in the match system. I stand there thinking about this, how much has changed, how little we knew.
"You always have to make me speak first, don't you?"
Xander asks, a hint of a smile on his face.
"You always win our arguments in the end."
"Xander," I say, and I sit down and slide right next to him. His arm goes around me and I put my head on his shoulder, and he bends his head to rest on mine. I sigh, so deep it is almost a shudder, at the relief I feel. At how good this is to be held like this. None of it is for the society, watching, always. It is all real, for me. I will miss him so much. Neither of us says anything for a moment as we look out at our street together one last time. I might come back, but I won't live here again. Once you've been relocated, you don't return except to visit. Clean breaks are best. And I will make the cleanest break of all when I go to find Kai. That is the kind of infraction that no one can overlook.
"I heard you leave tomorrow,"
Xander says, and I nod, my head moving against his cheek.
"I have to tell you something."
"What is it?" I ask. I look ahead, feeling his shoulder move under the shirt of his plain clothes as he shifts position slightly, but I don't move away. What will he tell me? That he can't believe I betrayed him? That he wishes he'd been matched with anyone but me? Those are the things I deserve to hear, but I don't think he will say them. Not Xander.
I remember what happened this morning, Xander whispers to me. I know what really happened to Kai.
How? I sit upright, look at him.
The red tablets don't work on me, he whispers, soft into my ear, so no one else can hear.
He looks down the street, back toward the Markham's house.
They didn't work on Kai either.
What? How is it that these two boys who are so different are connected in such unexpected, deep ways? Maybe we all are, I think, and we don't know how to see it anymore. Tell me. Xander still gazes at the little house with the yellow shutters where Kai lived hours ago, where Kai watched and learned how to survive. Xander taught him some of that, without knowing it, and perhaps Xander has been learning from Kai, too.
I dared him to take it once, a long time ago, Xander says quietly. It was when he first got here. I acted friendly to him, but inside I was jealous. I saw how you looked at him.
Really? I don't remember this at all, but suddenly I hope Xander's right. I hope part of me fell in love with Kai before anyone else told me to.
It's not a memory I'm proud of, Xander tells me. I asked him to come swimming with me one day when he first got here, and then on the way I told him I knew about his artifact. I knew about it because once, one burrow over, I was coming back from taking something to a friend, and I caught Kai using it, trying to find his way home. He was so careful. I think it was the one time he got it out ever, but he had bad timing. I saw him.
This image almost breaks my heart. It's another side of Kai I haven't seen before. Lost. Taking risks, as well as I know him, as much as I love him, there are still parts of him I don't know. It's that way with everyone, even Xander, who I never could have pictured being so cruel.
I dared him to find and steal 2 red tablets. I thought it would be impossible. I said that if he didn't bring them to swimming the next day to prove he could, I'd tell everyone about the compass, the artifact, and get Patrick in trouble.
What did he do?
You know Kai. He wouldn't risk his uncle.
Then Xander starts to laugh. Shocked, I ball my fists up in anger. Does he think this is funny? What, in this story, could there possibly be to laugh at?
So, Kai got the tablets, and guess who he stole them from? Xander says, still laughing. Just guess.
I don't know. Tell me.
My parents.
Xander stops laughing.
Of course, it wasn't funny at the time. That night, my parents were upset because their red tablets were missing. I knew right away what had happened, but of course I couldn't say anything. I couldn't tell them about the dare.
Xander looks down, and I notice that he has a large brown paper envelope in his hand. It makes me think of Kai's story. I'm hearing another part of it now.
It was a big mess. Officials came and everything. I don't know if you remember that.
I shake my head. I don't.
They checked to make sure we hadn't taken the tablets, and they could tell somehow that we hadn't, and my parents were pretty convincing, saying they didn't know what happened. They were completely panicked. Finally, the officials decided that my parents must have lost the tablets when they were swimming earlier in the week, and that they'd been negligent not to notice it sooner. They'd never caused any trouble before, so they got off without an infraction, just a citation.
Kai did that? Took the tablets from your parents?
He did.
Xander takes a deep breath.
I went to his house the next day, ready to tear him apart. He stood on the front steps waiting for me. When I got there, he held out the 2 red tablets, right for everyone to see. Of course, I was so scared, I grabbed them out of his hand and asked him what he was trying to do. That's when he told me that you don't play with other people's lives.
Xander seems ashamed, remembering.
And then he told me that we could start over if I wanted. All we had to do was take the red tablets, One for each of us. He promised me we wouldn't get hurt.
That's cruel of him, too, I say in shock. But to my surprise, Xander disagrees with me.
He knew the tablets didn't work on him. I don't know how, but he did. He thought they would work on me. He thought I wouldn't remember what a jerk I'd been and that I'd be able to start clean.
How many other people do you think are walking around out there, pretending that their tablets worked when they didn't? I ask, wondering.
As many as want to stay out of trouble, Xander says.
He glances at me.
Apparently, they don't work on you either.
It's not exactly like that, I say. But I don't want to tell him the whole story. He already carries enough of my secrets. Xander studies me for a moment, but then when I don't say more, he speaks again.
While we're talking about tablets,
he says,
I have a gift for you, a farewell gift.
He hands me the envelope and whispers,
Don't open it now. I put some things in there to remind you of the burrow, but the real gift is a bunch of blue tablets, in case you have to go on another long journey or something.
He knows I'm going to try to find Kai, and he's helping me. In spite of everything, Xander hasn't betrayed me. And I realize, too, that I never wondered, as I ran down the street after Kai, if it was Xander who had set those events in motion. I knew he hadn't. He kept faith with me. It's the prisoner's dilemma, this dangerous game that I must play with Kai and again with Xander. But what I know, and the official doesn't, is that all of us will do our best to keep each other safe. Oh, Xander, how did you get these?
They keep extra supplies in the pharmacy at the medical center,
Xander says.
These were slated for disposal. They're about to expire, but I think they'll still work for a few months past expiration.
The officials will still miss them. He shrugs.
They will. I'll be careful, and you should be too. I'm sorry I couldn't bring you real food.
I can't believe you're doing all of this for me, I say to Xander. He swallows hard.
Not just for you. For all of us.
It all makes sense now. If we could change things, in time, maybe we could all choose. Thank you, Xander, I say. I think about how I might have a chance to find Kai, thanks to Kai's compass and Xander's tablets, and I realize that in so many ways, Xander is the one who made it possible for me to love Kai. Kai thought you might be able to help me learn how to use the artifact, I tell him. Now I know why. Did you recognize it that day when I gave it to you?
I thought I did. But it had been a long time, and I kept my promise. I didn't open it.
But you know how to use it.
I figured out the basic principles of what it was after I'd seen it. I used to ask him questions about it once in a while.
It might help me find him.
Even if I could show you, why would I?
And Xander can't cover it anymore. Bitterness and anger mingle with the pain.
So you can go off and be happy with him? Where does that leave me? What does that leave me?
Don't say that, I tell him. You gave me the blue tablet so I could find him, right? If I'm gone and we can change things, maybe you can choose someone too.
I did,
he says, looking at me. I don't know what to say.
So I have to wish for the end of the world as I know it?
Xander asks, another hint of his old laugh in his voice. Not the end of the world, for the beginning of a better one, I say. And I am frightened too. Is this what we really want to wish for? One where we can get Kai back.
Kai,
Xander says, and there's sadness in his voice.
Sometimes it seems like everything I've done has been to help you be ready for someone else.
I don't know what to say. How to tell him that he is wrong, how I was wrong moments ago when I thought the same thing. Because yes, Xander has helped Kai and me time and time again. But how can I explain to Xander that he is a reason for wanting a new world too? That he is important. That I love him.
I can teach you,
Xander says, finally.
I'll send you some instructions in a message over the port.
But anyone can read those.
I'll make it so it looks like a love letter. We are still matched, after all. And we're good at pretending.
There's pain in his voice. And then he whispers,
Kasia, if we could choose, would you ever have chosen me?
I'm surprised he has to ask. And then I realize that he doesn't know that at one point I did choose him. When I first saw his face on the screen and then Kai's over it, I wanted safe and known and expected. I wanted good and kind and handsome. I wanted Xander. Of course, I say. We both look at each other and start to laugh. Then we can't stop. We're laughing so hard that tears roll down our faces, and Xander pulls away from me, leaning over and gasping for air.
We could still end up together, he says. After all this.
We could, I agree.
Then why do any of it?
I'm serious now. All this time it's taken me to understand what Grandfather meant. Why he didn't want to have the sample stored. Why he didn't want a chance to live forever on someone else's terms. Because it's about making our own choices, I tell him. That's the point, isn't it? This is bigger than us now. He looks up.
I know.
Maybe for Xander, it has always been bigger than us. Since he's seen more, known more, for years. As Kai has. How many times? I whisper to Xander. He shakes his head, confused. How many times have the rest of us taken the tablet and we can't remember? I ask.
Once, that I know of, Xander says. They don't use it much on citizens. I was sure they'd make us take it after the Markham son died, but they didn't. But one day, I'm pretty sure everyone in the borough took it.
Did I?
I'm not positive, he says. I didn't actually see you do it. I don't know.
What happened? I ask. Xander shakes his head.
I'm not going to say,
he whispers. I don't press him further. I haven't told him everything. About the kiss on the hill, the poem. And I cannot ask him to do what I have not. This is a difficult balance, telling the truth. How much to share, how much to keep, which truths will wound but not ruin, which will cut too deep to heal. So I gesture to the envelope instead. What did you put in here, besides the tablets? He shrugs.
Not much. I was mostly trying to hide the tablets. A couple of new rose blooms, like the ones we planted. They won't last long. I printed off a picture of one of the 100 paintings from the port. That one you did a report on a long time ago? That won't last long, either.
He's right. The paper from the ports always deteriorates quickly. Xander looks at me, sad.
Like the tablets. You'll have to use all of it in the next couple of months.
Thank you, I tell him. I didn't get anything for you. Everything happened so fast this morning. I fall silent again. Because I used what time I did have for Kai. I chose him again, over Xander.
It's all right,
he says.
But maybe you could...
He looks into my eyes, deep, and I know what he wants. A kiss. Even though he knows about Kai... Xander and I are still connected. This is still goodbye.
I know already that that kiss would be sweet. It would be what he would hold on to, as I hold on to Kai's. But that's something I don't think I can give. Xander.
It's all right,
he says, and then he stands up. I do too, and he reaches for me, pulls me close. Xander's arms are as warm and safe and good around me as they have always been. We both hold on, tight. Then he lets go and walks down the path without another word. He doesn't look back, but I watch him go. I watch him all the way home. The journey to our new home is fairly straightforward. Ride the air train to the city center, change to a long-distance air train for the farmlands of Kia Province. Most of our belongings fit into one small case each. The few things that don't will be sent later. As the four of us walk to the air train stop, neighbors and friends come out to say goodbye and wish us well. They know we're being relocated, but they don't know why. It isn't considered polite to ask. As we come to the end of the street, we see that a new sign has been hammered into place. Garden Burrow. Without the trees and without the name, Maple Tree Burrow is gone. It's as though it never existed. The Markhams are gone. We are gone. Everyone else will live on here in Garden Burrow. They've already added extra new roses to all the flower beds. The quickness with which Kai disappeared, with which the Markhams disappeared, with which we will disappear, makes me cold. It is as if we never happened. And I suddenly remember a time back when I was small, when I used to look for the air train home to Stony Burrow, and we had paths made of low, flat stones that led to our doors. This happened before. This burrow keeps changing names. What other bad things lie beneath the surface of our burrow? What have we buried underneath our rocks and trees and flowers and houses? That time Xander won't talk about, when we all took the red tablet? What happened? When other people left, where did they really go? They could not write their names, but I can write mine, and I will again, somewhere where it will last for a long, long time. I will find Kai, and then I will find that place. Once we are on the long-distance air train, my mother and Bram both fall asleep, exhausted from the emotion and exertion of this journey. I find it strange with everything else that happened that it was my mother's obedience which spelled the need for our relocation. She knew too much, and she admitted it in that report. She couldn't do otherwise. The ride is long, and there are other travelers, no soldiers like Kai. They keep them on their own trains. But there are tired families who look much like ours, a group of singles who laugh and talk excitedly about their jobs, and in the last car, a few rows of young women about my age going on a work detail for a few months. I watch these girls with interest. They are girls who did not get work positions and therefore will float around wherever they are needed for a time. Some of them seem sad and faded, disappointed. Others have faces turned to the windows with interest in their eyes. I catch myself glancing over at them more than I should. We're supposed to keep to ourselves, and I need to concentrate on finding Kai. I have equipment now. Blue tablets, the artifact called a compass, knowledge of the Sisyphus River, memories of a grandfather who did not go gentle. My father notices me watching the girls. While my mother and Bram sleep, he says softly,
I don't remember what happened yesterday, but I know the Markhams left the burrow, and I think that has hurt you.
I try to change the subject. I glance over at my sleeping mother. Why didn't they use a red tablet on her? Then we wouldn't have had to leave.
A red tablet?
My father asks, surprised.
Those are only for extreme circumstances. This isn't one of them.
Then, to my surprise, he says more. He speaks to me like an adult. More than that, like an equal.
I'm a sorter by nature, Kasia,
he says.
All the information adds up to something being wrong. The way they took the artifacts, Your mother's trips to the other arboretums? The gap in my memory from yesterday. Something is wrong. They are losing a war, and I can't tell who it's against. People on the inside or people on the outside. But there are signs of cracking.
I nod. Kai told me almost the same thing. But my father goes on.
And I've noticed other things, too. I think you're in love with Kai Markham. I think you want to find him, wherever he's gone.
He swallows. I glance over at my mother. Her eyes are open now. She looks at me with love and understanding, and I realize she knows what my father did. She knows. And even though she would not read a forbidden poem or destroy a tissue sample or love someone who was not her match, she still loves us, even though we have done those things. My father has always broken the rules for those he loves, just as my mother has always kept them for the same reason. Perhaps that is yet another reason why they make a perfect match. I can trust in my parents' love. And it strikes me that that is a big thing to trust, a big thing to have had, no matter what else happens.
We can't give you the life you want,
my father says, his eyes wet. He looks at my mother and she nods at him to continue.
We wish we could, but we can help you have a chance to decide which life you want.
I close my eyes and ask the angels and Kai and grandfather for strength. Then I open them and look straight at my father. How? Chapter 32. My hands are in the soil. My body is tired, but I will not let this work take away my thoughts. Because that is what the officials here want. Workers who work but do not think. Do not go gentle. So I fight. I fight the only way I know how, with thinking of him, even though the pain of missing him is so strong I can hardly stand it. I put the seeds into the ground and cover them with soil. Will they grow toward the sun? Will something go wrong so that they never push, never turn into anything, just stay here rotting in the ground? I think of him. I think of him. I think of him. I think of my family, of Bram, of my parents. I have learned something about love through all of this, about the love I have for Kai and the love I have for Xander and the love my parents and Bram and I have for one another. When we reached our new home, my parents requested that I be sent on a 3 months work detail because I showed signs of rebellion. The officials in our new village checked my data. It correlated with my parents' statement. My father mentioned a particular work detail he had in mind. Hard farming, planting an experimental winter crop in a western province through which the river of Sisyphus runs. He and Xander and my mother keep me updated on anything they learn about where Kai might be. I am closer to him here. I feel it. I think of Xander. We could have been happy. I know that, and it is perhaps the hardest thing to know. I could have held his hand, warm and strong, and we could have had what my parents have, and it would have been beautiful. It would have been beautiful. We wear no chains. We have nowhere to go. They wear us down with work. They don't beat us or hurt us. They simply want to make us tired. And I am tired. When I think I might give up after all, I remember the last part of the story that Kai gave me, the part I finally read before we left our home for the last time. Kasha, he wrote at the top of the page, in letters that were tall and clear and unafraid, that curled and moved and turned my name into something beautiful, something more than a word, a declaration, a piece of a song, a bit of art framed by his hands. There was only one Kai drawn on the napkin, smiling, a smile in which I could see both who he had been and who he became. His hands were empty again and open and reaching a little toward me.
Kesha, I know which life is my real one now, no matter what happens. It's the one with you. For some reason, knowing that even one person knows my story makes things different. Maybe it's like the poem says, maybe this is my way of not going gentle. I love you.
I had to burn that part of his story too, but I held the heat of that I love you close, like red, like a new beginning. Without knowing the pieces of Kai's story and the words of my poems, I might give up. But I think of my words and of the cache of tablets and compass hidden away and my family and Xander who send me messages on the work camp port screen that tell me they are still looking, they are still helping me. Sometimes when I look down at the pale seeds I scatter in the black dirt, they remind me of the night of my banquet when I imagined that I could fly. The darkness behind doesn't worry me, neither do the stars ahead. I think of how perhaps the best way to fly would be with hands full of earth, so you always remember where you came from, how hard walking could sometimes be. And I look at my hands, too, which move in the shape of my own inventions, my own words. It is hard to do, and I am not good at it yet. I write them in the soil where I plant and then step on them, dig holes in them, drop seeds in them to see if they will grow. I steal a piece of black burned wood from one of the crop fires and write on a napkin. Later, at another crop fire, my hand brushes over the flames with the napkin, and the words die. Ash and nothing. My words never last long. I have to destroy them before anyone sees them. But I remember them all. For some reason, the act of writing them down makes me remember. Each word I write brings me closer to finding the right ones. And when I see Kai again, which I know will happen, I will whisper the words I have written in his ear, against his lips. And they will change from ash and nothing into flesh and blood. This is Kate Simses. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Matched by Ali Condi. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced and directed by Cheryl Smith, with music by Cheryl Smith. Matched is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2010, all rights reserved. The book Matched.